Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
In this week's episode, we talk about our top three school cafeteria foods, football, and maybe some tweaks in the offensive running game, and then the baseball season and how we're doing with three series left to go. The 23 Personnel Podcast starts right now. You are listening to the 23 Personnel Podcast, where food and sports clash at the goal line. Here are your hosts, Spencer and Michael. All right, everybody, welcome to another week of the 23 Personnel Podcast. We're on episode 17. I'm your host, Spencer, joined by Michael.
Hello, everybody, for the 17th time.
Well, actually, more than that with a couple of, you know, mailbag episodes, but 17 weeks. I was talking to Samantha about this on the way home tonight. Like, we've been going at this for 4 months.
Yeah, we're very consistent. We should get some sort of consistency award. Maybe we could get like a Double Tough podcaster award.
Oh, of course you're referring to the Texas Tech football internal awards, which we'll definitely talk about. But I was going to mention, okay, so we talk about being consistent. Next week, we'll have to adjust our schedule a little bit because I'm going to be out of town Tuesday through Friday.
Oh. This is news. We need like late breaking.
We may record Monday. We may just skip a week. We'll see.
Okay.
Michael and I have to discuss this and settle this off air, offline.
Oh, man. Gosh. Okay.
Just all sprung right. That on him. And then 2 weeks later, I'll be out of town again Tuesday through Saturday. So.
Whew. Well, just take your laptop with you, man. Just record wherever. I'd
have to figure out how to take a mic too, and
it's easy. Just we'll just come to you, man. We can talk for 15 minutes about whatever. I can drive by your house, take pictures of your grass, let you know how it's going.
Well, so the problem with that though is that the first trip next week I'm going to be on the West Coast. I'm going to be 2 hours behind you.
Oh yeah, that is.
So when you're settling in to record at 8:30, at 6:30. Where I'm at, and it'll be like, okay, we just sat down to dinner.
Oh man, and vice versa. If we were trying to record at 8:30, it'd be 10:30 here, and all it would just be is an hour of me yawning. Yeah, just a lot of.
Yeah, so like I said, we'll work out the logistics. But yeah, so I didn't mention this, but I'm going to be traveling 2 weeks this month.
Well, who knows? Surprise. Maybe it's a good time for a break. You never know. But I'm sure our listeners would be, they'd be pretty disappointed. You should at least call and leave a voicemail, and we can just post it.
Yeah, we'll just do like a record. Like, I will record like my part of the conversation. You'll have to fill in yours as you think I was having this conversation.
A lot of breaths and going, ooh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely what I would put in the recording, not you. So I'd be agreeing with what you're saying. Anyway, so we're gonna talk about those internal football awards. There was a story that came out this past week. I got a chance to rewatch the spring game. I saw something that I missed the first time being there in person. We're gonna talk about baseball and the week that it's been against. Ooh, I'm blanking on the out-of-conference New Mexico and Oklahoma. And then, of course, they're playing against Arkansas tonight. And then the schedule going to TCU this weekend. We will not be talking about the basketball postseason wrap-up because neither one of us went to that.
Hey, now you said last week.
That's kind of on me. I said I was going to go. Last week, we were supposed to go
RSVP.
To... Samantha and I were going to go to a movie. And I did not purchase tickets in time, so when we showed up they were completely sold out of the movie we wanted to see. Had to reschedule to go tonight, so the basketball postseason wrap with Fran Fraschilla was put on the back burner. And then we got lots of great questions that we'll get to in our mailbag section. We will have a shorter episode this week, maybe, probably, and have a mailbag. Just because I'm greedy for downloads, and when we separate the two episodes, while the per episode download numbers go down, our per week downloads go way up. So, we're going to keep doing that. The people have spoken. They like shorter episodes. We're going to break it up and give them the content they want. Starting with a killer power ranking of school cafeteria foods. I heard this come up on the radio, and I was like, we have to talk about this.
Man, I'm so glad you brought this up. It's a good one.
So, okay, when I'm talking about school cafeteria, I'm going all the way back to elementary school, because at that point, you were just served food. You didn't really have a choice. You just kind of took it and just ate it, or you brought your own lunch. I was not one of those people that brought a lunch. I was just kind of just had what the cafeteria was serving. For me, middle school and then high school, obviously we had different lines in the cafeteria. You can go, okay, well, I want to go to the grill and just get a burger, or just go get some fries, and super healthy. Just like, okay, I'm going to get, you know, chili cheese fries and Flamin' Hot Cheetos today, or whatever.
Yeah. Fries with gravy on them. I could get an order of those from, not everybody got those. It was just, well, there's gravy there and there's fries right next to it. Why don't you just pour those on there? And the ladies who served the lunch at the school were so nice, and they would indulge me quite often with some different requests.
I wonder how harshly we were judged in their minds with our food choices.
This kid
is eating chili cheese fries again.
Oh, mm-hmm. I was thinking as just far mm-hmm. as being like difficult, because I was never difficult to them. But okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah, they might be thinking, gosh, he's
ordering fried chicken again. Uh-huh.
Yeah, this
you just keep doing that.
Yeah, he'll be 300 pounds before he's 20. You know, I'm sure that's what they were thinking.
Yeah. So, like I said, we're going to go back to elementary school. I tested this question with Samantha. It was on my list before, like when I heard the topic brought up. This was like the first thing I thought of. This was the first answer Samantha threw out. This was the first answer that I heard on the radio. So I think it's pretty universal that in terms of school cafeteria food, a lot of people's favorite was that rectangular slice of pizza. That you just, you know, the pepperoni were like cubes and the cheese was really spotty. It was thin crust, but like in the shape of a piece of paper, basically. It wasn't that big, but a little index card.
I'm going to blow your mind. Pizza doesn't even make my top three.
I don't. Well, okay. That just means I'm interested to see where you go with this, because past pizza, I had a hard time filling out numbers two and three.
Well, okay. The issue with pizza is our school changed pizzas. So you'd get attached to one, you know, and you'd have it for about 2 years. And then all of a sudden you're getting.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
instead of the rectangle pizza you're getting, I kid you not, there was a hexagon pizza. It was like a six-sided little mini pizza that you would get. And they kind of swapped back and forth. And then,
how are you supposed to eat a hexagonal shaped slice of pizza? It's not even
kinda
a slice. It's just a...
You kind of had to cut it up, basically, from what I remember. And of course,
it's like a...
Let me ask you this. What did they always serve with pizza?
Oh, it was always something weird, like...
Was it corn? Yes. Yes, it is such a weird thing, but I still sometimes associate that with like, well, I mean, I guess we could have some corn with our Domino's. I don't know who thought that. Yeah, just, I don't know, put some corn on the side. That works.
Yeah.
Corn was also served with spaghetti a lot. I think they think it goes with Italian food.
Oh, the dietitians in the school district were sorely, sorely mistaken.
Yeah, and so I think because of monetary reasons, it was like, well, the rectangular pizza folks are sticking it to us, so we're not even going to buy their pizza. They're raising their pizza up by 2.3 cents a slice, and we can't afford that, so.
So, in terms of like numbers 2 and 3 on this list, at least for me, I think 2 would have to be like the steak fingers and mashed potatoes and gravy.
It's a nice one.
And then I don't remember a whole lot of other foods served. I mean, there was like probably like meatloaf or there were hot dogs some days, hamburgers, which were always really nasty. There's 2 other ones I thought of that I was kind of considering would be Sloppy Joe's.
Yeah, Sloppy Joe's could, they were hit or miss at mine. And I think it was just me. I just didn't like Sloppy Joe's then. I like them now, but I didn't like them.
Well, it's probably, they just had really trash sauce and.
Yeah.
I don't know. It wasn't very good, but I assumed it was just because they could make it in bulk fairly simply.
Yeah, you could have a vat. And you were going to say, and what was the other thing you're.
Corn dog.
Okay, that's hard to mess up because you know that was a frozen.
Yeah, frozen. They just throw it in the oven.
Yeah.
Whenever they did serve like hot dogs, and then like I had a hot dog, it was like almost a guarantee I was gonna get sick that day.
I used to. Okay, I am not gonna bash high school cafeterias. It sounds like I'm going to, but I loved cafeterias as a kid, and I remember going to Furs and thinking it was the greatest thing. And then I went to elementary school and stuff. And I was like, oh, it's just like Furs. So I was sold from day one. I loved cafeteria food. That said, I went until I was probably like 16 or 17 thinking I hated hot dogs because I hated our cafeteria hot dogs. They were so terrible. But it turns out that it was just, I didn't like those. Almost any other hot dog is good. Yeah, they were probably boiled. You know, boiled.
Which you can do if you do it hot enough and long enough, you can kind of actually cook it a little bit. But even then, like, there's probably a really fine line of overdoing it, and then you just get this weird.
Yeah, it's kind of a rubbery texture, and then the buns were kind of hit or miss. Sometimes they were, it's like they would try to steam them and then just make them stale, or
it's like they were frozen, just like and they tried cold, to thaw
or yeah, there were a couple of things there. So I just thought, oh man, hot dogs are terrible. I'm never going to eat hot dogs. That's that. Because I trusted the cafeteria that much.
they wouldn't serve me bad food.
No, I was like, surely it's me. It's not them. I just don't like hot dogs. Okay. Okay, all right. So my top 3. Number 1's it might be kind of weird. Unless you went to my school, then you might have the same affinity I did. But number 1 for me was yeast rolls.
So not even like an entree. You went with a side.
Yes, because it was so versatile. Because it would end up being a dessert a lot of times. You would get your buttery roll, and you would sit purposefully near people who didn't eat theirs, and you would try to get theirs from them, because a lot of times the teacher would come around, because we couldn't be trusted. The teacher would come around with a ketchup bottle full of honey, which I know is a weird sounding thing, but she'd come around with some honey and just put that nozzle in the roll and give you a good squeeze and just do that for the entire class or whoever asked for it. And so that's one of my fondest memories, and it ties in with my number two food, which is chicken fried steak, which is pretty similar to, yeah, you know, what you're saying, because I would take that roll and make a chicken fried steak sandwich.
Nice.
And it was just always one of the best things. And then,
but see, the problem with doing something like that is when you combine all the food into one dish, like, you get through it really quickly. Like, yeah, okay, I have my chicken fried steak, I've got mashed potatoes, I've got gravy, I've got a bun. You put it all together, like, oh man, that took me like 3 minutes and now I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah. That was an issue. That was another one of those sit around
from the fat kid experience on the side of the mic.
Hey, I'm there with you, man. I had a huge appetite. So you would also try to find a roll that you could use for dessert. So you'd want like a roll for the chicken fried steak sandwich, and then you would want a roll for the honey later. So you'd have to sit next to somebody strategically. Or if you were still hungry, you could just drink a lot of sweet tea, which I can't believe that we had sweet tea as really young children just available to us to serve ourselves. That was probably really, really tough on some teachers in the afternoon. But the third spot, I've got a couple things. I think the first thing I want to put in there, though, is tacos. Like, we would do, you know, crunchy beef tacos, and there was always pinto beans on the side. And so we got to where, I think the kid who gets credited with it, there was this kid named Lance who had the brilliant idea of turning it into a taco salad, where you just dump out everything that was inside the tacos, and then you crunch up the taco shells, and then you put we had salsa, so you put salsa on it. I'm pretty sure it was Pace. They didn't keep it in its original container, but I'm pretty sure it was Pace. And then you put the beans on it and everything, so taco salad ended up being really good. And then a couple other things I really liked were chicken patties. Like a chicken patty sandwich was always good. And then the I blanked on the other one. I can't believe that. I completely blanked on it. Anyway, those are kind of my top ones. But yeah, it starts with the rolls because they were so versatile. It was dessert. It was the base of a sandwich. It was the way to get that last bit of gravy. It was man, it was killer. I think about those rolls sometime.
Yeah, I don't really have fond memories of elementary school cafeteria food.
I do, obviously. And it's probably weird. I even liked the whole process of it. I liked, because it was $1.10 when I was in school. And either we'd bring cash from home or you'd have like a punch card. There was always some way that you had to quote unquote pay, whether it was actual paying with cash or if you had some sort of barcode or something. And that was kind of fun to feel like you were kind of adultish going through a line and then paying for your food, even though you weren't paying for it yourself, I'm sure.
Right. So the way ours did it is you could pay by the week or you can pay by the month. My parents would pay by the month.
Yeah.
And it was like $28. So it was like basically $1 a day.
Yeah. It's crazy.
And then you were assigned a PIN. So they would just charge it to your account, basically. So you would deposit the money into an account, and then you would just, which didn't make any sense. Like, well, if I'm going to be eating there every day, I'm going to be using just, well, why make me use the account?
Yeah, well, I think our teachers got stuck with a lot of the money a lot of times because at first we had punch cards, and so I think they would keep up with the punch cards, and during roll they would say, hey, so and so, you've only got like two punches left on your punch card for lunch. You know, bring your lunch money or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it was just one of the 100 things they have to deal with every day. But yeah, we did that, and then we switched to some sort of, it was like, I almost remember my number. Yeah, we had something like that too later on. But yeah, the cafeteria food, man. It was, I was all about it. I still wish I could remember the other thing I thought of that I really liked, but it's completely gone.
It will be like 45 minutes in. You'll be like, oh, I remember.
Yeah.
So just blurt it out. Like, we're talking about football or something. Like,
lasagna! I don't think we ever had that, but if that was it, yeah. I'll probably will remember it and just say it in the middle of something.
Yeah. But speaking about food, there was this article that came out last week from Don Williams of the AJ talking about some old-timey awards. So, I'm sorry. Awards named after previous Texas Tech football players, historical players, to recognize effort and grit and performance on and off the field. That he hadn't heard of them being handed out or awarded the past few years. So he started tracking it down. Turns out since December of 2009, Texas Tech has not given out these specific historic awards to members of the football team. And then I also heard that the football team likely does not have a team banquet, which is where these awards would be given out. There was a lot of, not uproar, but there was some heated discussions, mainly from some of the older Texas Tech fans that wanted to bring it back or thought that it was a staple in Texas Tech history, that we're being too focused on the now and we're not remembering our history, and that these awards should be brought back. And first, when I first saw it, I can't remember if it was Don Williams himself that said it or if it was Seth that retweeted it and said he agreed with Don that these awards need to be brought back. And of course, in my snarky Twitter banter, fired back, this just reeks of an old man take. Because there was a line in there that he's, and I was picking on one thing he said and like just blowing it up and zooming way in on that, that Tech should be less focused on trying to dream up new traditions and drop some of the historical aspects of the program.
Yeah, I remember seeing that line too. I'm trying to find it. I've got it pulled up.
Yeah, I'm not doing it justice. It was much more polished and well written than the nonsense I just spouted out. But I guess the point is that I want to bring it with you, Michael, is what are your thoughts on whether the football team has awards for the toughest player, or I don't even remember what some of the awards were specifically calling out, but then, like, you know, they were named after Pete Cothran.
EJ Holub.
EJ Holub, yeah, was another name.
Yeah, EJ Holub has the Double Tough Award. JT King, Most Improved Player. What else we got? Yeah, Pete Cothran. Cothran? Is that right? Gosh. Memorial Team. Yeah, well, there's not on the, I was expecting one, and there's not right there. That's a typo. Anyway, okay, I found the line real quick before I answer what you're asking. He said, Tech needs to spend less time dreaming up, quote, new traditions and be guardian of its old ones.
Which, okay, so Seth made the point that these new traditions may be, like, things like the silent scare and the fourth quarter song could be involved. And I was like, okay, yes, those were poorly executed. Silent scare was also a bad idea. Fourth quarter song, if done properly, could have been really cool. The first time they rolled it out, there was like 30 seconds of silence where the song should have been playing over the PA system in the stadium. And then when they finally got it on, it was halfway through the song. So they didn't like... It didn't just take a while to get it going. They had the song playing and then figured out to turn it on.
And they probably stopped it just in time to run a Guerrilla Lawyer ad.
Yeah, and of course, they also had they had like a fan vote to decide the song. And there was like this Seven Nation Army song. There was Thunderstruck by AC/DC. There were a couple other songs. And okay, I don't remember all of them. I probably would have been okay with any of them. I think what they settled on was AC/DC, which would have been really cool if done, you know, if they had played it from the beginning. So I think it flopped on game one. It never came back.
Yep.
The Silent Scare was ridiculed from the first time it was released into the public. Like, oh, we're going to scare our opponents by being silent instead of booing them? No, that's dumb.
Yeah. I mean, because nothing puts the fear in the heart of people coming into a stadium if it's kind of quiet.
Yeah, because you weren't ever going to get the stadium silent.
No, gosh, no.
Like, quietest it's ever going to get is when there's an injury, but there's still lots of people talking and carrying on.
Well, a lot of times the silent scare was supposedly going to happen
within as they were coming on the field.
Yeah, or within, because Tech comes on the field right around the same time a lot of times, you know? I mean, what are we supposed to do? Oh, Tech's coming on the field, or they're still on there? Because I've always thought it was silly, like, the one part I did kind of like about it was our guys would come out on the field, and then, you know, the opposing team would come out while our guys are still kind of running through the end zone, and then we immediately start booing. And it looks like we're booing our own guys. So that's always kind of irked me, but it's not like a big deal. You know exactly what
like,
they're doing.
Yeah, and it's not like they don't know what's going on either. So oh my gosh, the team is, or the fans are suddenly booing us. Like, no, the opposing team just came out of their tunnel.
Yeah.
Is it bad sportsmanship to boo an opposing team as they come onto the field?
No, I don't think so.
Is it bad sportsmanship to throw stuff at them? Yes.
Yes.
Is it bad sportsmanship to throw quips and tortillas with holes in them and possibly dirty language? No, I don't. I think people get too riled. We're getting like past the point here.
Yeah.
So, yes, some of those new traditions that maybe Don Woons was referencing are not worth trying to keep going as some of these historical awards. I will concede that point. But do I think it's necessary for these awards to keep going? Because it seemed like the point he was making is that either the fans need something to cheer about or... I forgot the other point I was trying to make there. It's
what I gathered from it when I read it was that it's not for the fans at all. It's for the players, because what he mainly talked about was how proud of these awards these players are and how proud of them they still are, which is great. I mean, they
for those players though. I think that's like almost generational. I don't think like if you were to tell current players, hey, you won the EJ Holla Double Tough Award, you're like, cool. Who is that?
Yeah, unfortunately, they probably would ask that.
Like, okay, yeah, his name is on the stadium. They don't know who that is.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, I think this is a great football article in April because it's gotten everybody to yes. start talking, and
not on the season.
No, and I don't think. If they implemented it, that'd be fine. I just don't care. I mean, I don't have one thought on one way or the other on. I don't feel like they shouldn't. I feel like if they did now, it would obviously seem like
that it was the power of Don Williams that
right,
resurrected
which isn't,
these awards.
That never looks good. That's never great to
that some beat writer was able to
have the press convince you to do something as a coach. That's really never a good thing. So I think the fact that he wrote it kind of doomed Kingsbury either way for the folks that think it should come back. So I really think it is good for the players. You know, he spoke with several of them, and they're both really, or not both, but they were all really, you know, proud of their trophies, and they're still up in their house where people can see them years later. And I don't see that it's, going to affect Tech football one way or the other. I don't think someone's going to go out there, and if they know that there's a, you know, an MVP award or a Dare to Be Great award, that they're going to try to earn that, and you know, catapult Tech into 9-3 territory.
Yeah, I think that was the other way I was going, is that, like, we needed to institute these to the other point that Don was trying to make is that without these awards, the players have nothing to work towards. And
how about winning some football games?
Yeah, they're not going to win as many games without this kind of motivation. It's like,
or playing time. Or
so the other question, I had thought of this really quickly. Okay. To your point, no, I don't care if they bring it back. I don't care if they, like, if they make it public or what. It doesn't matter to me. I think it's silly to be worrying about this and not, like, hey, we're looking at losing season again if something doesn't change. What realistically needs to happen to change? Where are we going to get these wins from? Yes, I know it's April the 24th. Spring practice is over. There's nothing to talk about for 4 more months until we start game prep for Ole Miss. The other thing, so do you think if they were to revive these kind of postseason awards that they could do it while also not like throwing out the old awards, but like revamping them and saying, hey, we're going to give out the Michael Crabtree MVP or the Zach Thomas Toughness Award or the B.J. Simmons Toughness Award. You know what I mean? Like, if they were to refresh it with more current players.
I would not go there. Like 20 years old. No, I would not do that at all.
No?
Because if you thought people were upset before...
Yeah.
Wait till they come back.
Then you're saying we're going to go ahead and throw.
Yeah, we're just going to. Yeah, because people are going to look at. Well, you can't just, so you're bringing back the awards, but you're going to completely ignore the people that the original awards were named after. And no, I think you stick with it just like it is, because that's the point of the tradition. That's what he was kind of saying, and I agree with that. You don't want to force traditions. They kind of just happen. And this happened over the years, and if they were to bring it back, I think they'd need to keep it the exact same, and just educate the kids. You know, they could very easily put on a, well, maybe not very easily, but with some research, they could put, you know, 1 minute, 2 minute clip on each of these names that this award's named after before they present it. You know, if they're doing like a team banquet thing and kind of turn it into a little bit of a production for the guys, they could. Or they could just do that throughout the year. You know, here's who this is named after. One of you guys will be awarded with this. Here, who else has won this award? And, you know, they could go into it and really play with it and make it kind of more interesting and educate the guys and have them a little bit fired up about it. But I think they've got a lot going on right now, so I don't expect them to stop what they're doing and comb through 60 years of footage and try to put together some stuff and contact all these other players. And I mean, that'd be a full-time job for somebody, some grad assistant.
What is Rodney Allison doing? Isn't he like the double T varsity club or whatever they call that alumni group?
Yeah, maybe
athletes.
Yeah, maybe he could get that
put
going
to him.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure he won one of those awards, too.
But no, I definitely wouldn't change the names. I think that would just be a...
Yeah, okay. So that was just a dumb idea. That's okay.
That wouldn't work.
All right. So speaking of having other things going on in terms of the players, I went back and rewatched the spring game. Picked up something actually pretty major that I missed watching it live. I was talking to Michael about this before we started recording, is that... So I finished watching it last night, and I picked up on it pretty early, and then from then watching the rest of the game, I don't remember a play where Texas Tech ran the ball and there wasn't a pulling offensive lineman. It looked like every running play and play action pass to help, you know, disguise that there was at least one offensive lineman that was pulling. It was moving. And I don't know how I missed it, probably because I was talking to Michael and Seth and Labar.
Yeah, we were having a good time.
Yeah, not watching the game at all.
No.
The running game was I don't know, intriguing. Like, not having, like, been, like, you know, in... Wow, I'm having a really great time with my words tonight. It not being my primary focus when I was going, because I was looking for wide receivers. It was sneaky efficient, although there wasn't any big plays. And then when I went back and watched, I was like, oh, look at that. They're pulling offensive linemen. They're getting big lead blockers on every play by pulling the backside guard or the backside tackle or doing the buck sweep, or I don't know how else to describe that, where every offensive lineman is essentially pulling. Nobody goes straight forward. They all take a step off to one side and just, you know, it's a sweep. Everybody's moving one direction, and the running back is looking for space to cut upfield. And it's something I don't remember Texas Tech doing much of in this previous season. I remember it happening some with Neil Brown as offensive coordinator, you know, 6-7 years ago. So did you, what do you think about adding this dimension of the run game, this wrinkle in the play calling? Because I don't know if it's a Kevin Johns thing, if it's a Clay McGuire, or if this is just something that Kingsbury picked up on and said, we're going to do this to help our running game, because it needs to be more efficient, especially if we're breaking in a new quarterback and four of the five wide receivers are trying to make a name for themselves. Nobody knows who they are. We might need to be running the ball a lot more this year.
I like it. Like we were talking about before we hit record, I think this is a good sign because it shows that we have some pretty athletic offensive linemen who can move, who can get some speed going, and you know, get over and get downfield. I almost wonder if part of it is because it would be a little bit of a delay. You know how many times Tech or any other Big 12 school really got called for a lineman downfield last year? Do you think this would help that at all? Or I doubt it was even considered. I think they probably just made the decision to do it because they liked how it looked and the options that it gave them. But would this keep that from happening as much? You wouldn't have a lineman immediately just trying to block and then take off and block for a runner, as opposed to you have a lineman that's got to, he's got to step back a little bit and pull around and then find somebody and, you know, burn a little bit more time.
I see where you're going with that. And when I see this much motion on the offensive line, it reminds me of the Art Briles offense at Baylor from a couple years ago that was super heavy in the run game. Now, they're running a lot of inverted veer, and I don't know if that's what we're going to see, because there wasn't a lot of running, quarterback running in the spring game, because you can't tell how effective the quarterback is going to be if all you have to do is touch him and he's down. Whereas in a real game, you have to tackle him. And the inverted veer is obviously an option-based running play where you're, you know, relying on the quarterback to make a read on somebody. That play usually involves some kind of pulling offensive line. But I think that, and then the development of the RPO, run pass option plays, where the offensive line is basically run blocking every play, and then you just throw it fast enough that you don't catch anybody downfield. The offensive lineman doesn't have enough time to get far enough downfield because they throw it so fast. So it may have, you know, a bit of that. It may have, we're just going to be running the ball a lot more and running, you know, some power, some power concepts with pulling offensive line. There may be some options, some veer, inverted veer type stuff where we're pulling and reading. So I'm interested to see how it actually plays out. I was a lot more intrigued by this the more I watched. I was like, wow, this is something I wasn't, like, you know, like I said, I was watching for the receivers and I was noticing how much motion there was on the running plays. Like, wow, we are moving offensive linemen. We are pulling, you know, sometimes two guys in like a Tyler Carr. Like, we got three guys moving to get in front of the running back and like a mini screenplay that you're not throwing, you just hand it off and he's got three guys in front of him already. So when I was bringing this up to Michael, I was like, well, you know, what's interesting though, is that, so I had to watch that off of my DVR. There haven't been any highlights of the spring game posts on YouTube from the athletic department, or even the Sights and Sounds videos they were doing from the sidelines, which they did in Midland and Frisco. There wasn't one of those videos for the Lubbock scrimmage. There wasn't a, like I said, a highlight video from the game, even though it was broadcast. I don't think there's like anything super like conspiracy related that Tech is just trying to hide it and not release it. But I also do know this is a coaching staff that has previously guarded some of its information, if you will. And now it sounds like I'm being like the conspiracy theorist, like they're not letting people see that they're going to be running the ball. It's like, okay, it was broadcast on national television. Anybody that was watching would have seen that. They don't have to watch on YouTube.
Well, yeah. I mean, you've got a point that they could have tried at some enough things in there, or it could be as simple as some sort of weird broadcasting right thing. But it is strange because all the, you know, the football games, sometimes the whole game will be on YouTube the next day, or definitely a highlight video at the very least will be on YouTube, and usually more than one, like top five plays or something, mm-hmm. or then just like a, you know, like a 2.5-3 minute just plain Jane highlight video. So I don't understand that. It is a bit odd.
Yeah, because in the regular season, you would see a highlight video from the Big 12 conference. You'd see one from the athletic department, and then you'd see a top five plays. So you get essentially three highlight videos from reputable sources, with air quotes here, not some fan that just pulled together a highlight reel off his DVR, which one of us may have to do to get the spring game on YouTube, because it's not there now. You know, talking about how the run game is looking, unless you still have it on your DVR, you can't go back and watch it.
Right, and at least. I know, and I thought about keeping it because I did watch it a little bit before we recorded last week, just to get a few more, you know, a few more insights on some of the receivers and stuff, and a couple of the defensive linemen. But I was not paying attention to the O-line, aside from the fact that they were doing a good job of making room to run. But I didn't catch what you caught with them pulling and getting one or two guys in front of the running back from the other side. So, yeah, it's now deleted though. So I've got to take your word for it, man. Are you sure you're not just
well? Here's
it
the
up?
Thing, it's still on my DVR, so I may go back and try to pull some video off of that. You know, whether I record it with my phone, which would be kind of jicky, but just to share with some of our internal, or maybe put it up on YouTube, like on a private video, and share it with share it on Stake in the Plains. I'm not sure.
Get it on VHS.
Yes. Oh, beta.
Beta. See, I'm still holding out. I thought
or
beta,
HD DVD.
HD DVD. I thought beta was gonna be the format, and I just know that as soon as I get rid of this Betamax player, they're gonna change their minds again. So, one of these days, man.
So as much as we can drag out some football, spring talk, since, you know, spring practice
morsels
is over. Like I said, I'll have to go back and see if I can pull some video. But why don't we go ahead and talk about some like mid-season action that we have. Like, we have got one team currently competing and actually playing right now, and that's the baseball team.
You want to know the final score?
I know they were down 5-1 when we started, so
that was the final score.
Well, it's, you're on the road against like the number 6 team. You're fourth, and they're like 6th, 7th in that range. Though it's not like a killer that you lost. Obviously, you want to win games, but it's a non-conference. Really, winning these games just helps solidify your RPI. But, anyways, so they're in Fayetteville playing Arkansas for tonight. They're gonna play again tomorrow. This past weekend, they were home against Oklahoma, took the series 2-1. You know, the Friday night game was was interesting in that, like, Davis Webb was not Davis Webb. Oh my goodness. I was talking to an intern in my office this week today. He's a New York Giants fan. We were talking about the draft. He's actually going to be going to the draft. And he was talking about, like, you know, with they're shooting to draft Saquon Barkley. He's like, you know, that means you're gonna have Davis Webb as your quarterback though, right? He was just shaking his head. Anyway, so Davis Martin was struggling to get batters out, and he didn't go very deep into the game, but still effective. And like, he didn't give up a lot of runs or a lot of hits. I think he gave up one or two runs over his 4 or 5 innings, and it came down to a walk-off balk in the 10th inning, which was a super heady play from Tim Tadlock and Josh Jung to bluff the steal home on a pitcher who had been pulled over from first base. So he didn't pitch very often. Oklahoma had gone through so many pitchers in the 9th and 10th innings that they were kind of just trying to save guys for the rest of the weekend. Pulled the first baseman over to try to close out the game. Tech ends up tying the game in the 10th, and then they get Josh Jung all the way over to third, bluffs a steal home, gets him to balk, and ends the game on a balk.
That's pretty. That I remember seeing the replays of that. I didn't get the chance to watch any of this baseball live. I got to listen to, I unfortunately got to listen to the third game. Yeah, because I was driving back from Dallas, so I didn't get to watch the first two or listen to them at all. But I caught it all that Saturday morning on Twitter, and. True confession, I didn't even know what a balk was for sure, aside for, you know, faking a throw. I knew that's considered a balk. You know, when you pull up short or you act like you're going to pitch and you don't. And then I went and looked up on, I forgot where I found it. This is great. Typical me. Can't remember where I found it or what it said. But they went through the different balking scenarios. And man, there were probably at least like 15. Something about stepping off the rubber. I mean, there's all these different scenarios that you can look off one way, but not the other. Like if you look off to third and then throw to first or something weird like that.
If you drop the ball from your hand while you're on the rubber.
Yes.
If your hands come together and then you come apart and you're not in a pitching motion, that's a balk.
Man, that just makes me respect pitchers even more to have all that stuff in the back of their head.
Yeah, they just need to get into their routine.
Yeah.
Get their habits and don't let a guy like, you know, a runner on third bluffing to steal home freak you out enough that you, like, mid-pitch, you jump off the rubber to throw home. It was like he knew it instantly. Like, he dropped his head and his shoulders. Like, yeah, he knew.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Josh Jung on Tuesday when they were in Albuquerque hit for the cycle, which was the first time that it's happened for Texas Tech in 10 years. Coincidentally, last time it happened for Tech was in New Mexico. They did it against New Mexico State or Eastern. I don't remember. It was 10 years ago-ish. Josh Jung did it trying to one-up Grant Little, who had hit 9 RBIs the weekend before. I think Josh Jung hit 8 in that game.
Jeez.
And then, of course, he had a really great series against Oklahoma. I don't have the specific numbers. He was named Big 12 Player of the Week. Like I said, took the series against Oklahoma. Not too long ago, you were looking at the Big 12 standings, looking at Oklahoma at the top. That started off like 6-0, and you were like 1-4, 1-5, 2-5. I don't know. You had a pretty miserable start, and you're like, wow, we're going to be like chasing Oklahoma. At this point in the season, you're tied with Oklahoma, again with air quotes, in your conference standings, although you have the head-to-head, and in your overall record, you have them by 6 or 7 games because they played a really weak non-conference schedule, which is why, you know, when they were running through the first part of the conference schedule and winning all those games, they weren't getting a lot of respect in the polls.
Right.
They had a really weak strength of schedule. So you took 2 of 3 from them. You moved up. I think you were tied with Texas for second currently. They did not have a conference series this weekend. So you had a handful of teams that were ahead of you in the standings that hadn't had a off weekend like you had had. Texas had an off weekend, so they didn't play a conference series. Unfortunately, another team ahead of you in the rankings was Oklahoma State. They swept Kansas. Not doing you any favors there, Jayhawks, thanks. TCU was right in that area. They were swept by Baylor. Some big news for TCU, though, this week. Lukan Baker is out for the season. He broke his leg. I don't know how it happened. I didn't see it. I only heard about it like the next day. So bittersweet, because that dude is just a machine. He's just super intimidating to go up against. But as a opposing fan, glad that you don't have to face him. And then their like number one pitcher, I think his last name is Jancek, is also out for the season. Before you face them. So arguably two of their biggest pieces of their team are out. And you will go, you will play them this weekend in Fort Worth. You know, you look at them having just been swept by Baylor, you're like, this is a winnable series, obviously, maybe even a sweepable series, if that's a word, sweepable.
Right, which who thought that would happen back when the season started?
Definitely not. And I'm not saying
this was one of
that,
those circled weekends where you're just like, oh man, this is going to be probably the top two Big 12 teams going against each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, life happens. So you've got all sorts of different things going on.
And TCU obviously has more talent outside of these two players.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, it would be like, you know, Tech, you know, they lost Stephen Gingrey, but also if they had lost a Josh Young, a Grant Little, somebody that like really leads the offense as well. And you get kind of hamstrung there. I don't think TCU had the depth on offense like the Tech offense has. When you look at guys like, you know, Gabe Holt, Grant Little, Josh Young, Cameron Warren, although less so now that he kind of cooled off in the conference part of the schedule. Zach Reams just figured out how to hit home runs and just been mashing them left and right. He's up there in terms of conference home runs. He's not leading the conference, but I think he's up there with like, he's pretty high up. I think he has 10 or 11 right now, which is surprising because I think he leads your team in home runs. I think you've got Grant Little and Josh Young up there with like 9 or 10 as well, but I think Zach Reams has as many, if not a little more. Anyways, Labar is probably shaking his head like these guys know nothing. I don't know stat peak as well as he does.
He's definitely right when it comes to me. It's winnable. I mean, it's definitely looks like things are in our favor. I was checking it out. I thought, you know, maybe TCU's gonna kind of unleash because they've maybe they're a team like Tech, because Tech is 21-2 at home. You know, Tech just really barely loses at home, but TCU's only 14-7 at home. So, I mean, we're 10-7 on the road. So there's a pretty good chance that we could walk away with at least a series win on this. Yeah.
I would look at Tech's road record and kind of lean towards not sweeping, because you've seen them go on the road against
Kansas.
Worse teams than TCU and not pulling out the sweep. Now, Kansas was one on my mind, but you also had like weird weather.
Well,
you
Baylor
were against Baylor,
yeah.
Weird weather at the end of a really tough road trip. But, you know, you don't really have any easy spots in your schedule left. Like, this is one of your last non-conference series, and it's against another top 10 team in Arkansas. You know, past TCU, you still have a home series against Texas, who, by the way, is second in the conference. You have to go on the road to Stillwater, to the number one team in the conference, Oklahoma State. So being able to three-peat as the conference champion is still within reach. Not TCU. Oklahoma State and Oklahoma play this weekend. So if Oklahoma does some damage against the Cowboys, you can really help yourselves or the Sooners can help you kind of climb back into the conference race while you're, you know, playing TCU. But, I mean, you've got 9 games left in the conference schedule before you go to the tournament, which you never really seem to do well in.
Just kind of across the board.
Just yeah.
Big 12 tournaments in general don't usually go well for Texas Tech fans.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to seeing how they do against TCU. Obviously, a series win would be huge. On the road against a team that's got a lot of talent on it, albeit there's some injuries, setting you up hopefully to do well against Texas and Oklahoma State to finish out the conference. Hopefully, here in about a month, we're talking about how Tech won the Big 12 conference for the third straight year, doing well in the tournament in Oklahoma City, which it seems like that'd be a really cool tournament to go watch, especially in that environment, in that, you know, minor league ballpark. It's actually a really neat stadium. Do you have any baseball thoughts, Mr. McDonald?
I do not. We've exhausted my baseball thoughts. I just couldn't believe what a balk was, and that it resulted in us winning a game, basically, that was very, seemed to be, I think it was close the whole game. And then
it was back and forth, yeah.
Yeah, and then it was, I don't know, it was just mildly depressing listening to the drumming that Tech received on Sunday on that drive home, because it's a pretty good drive from Dallas, so I was kind of thinking, oh, this will break up the monotony a little bit, and then it just kept getting worse and worse, and oh, great. Even though, as much as I like listening to Jeff Haxton, I had to turn it off after a while. But they did at least make it interesting. I mean, I think Tech kind of had Tech had a 4-run eighth inning, you know, to kind of get themselves back in it. And I think that was, let's see, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So that was 9-5 at the end of the eighth, and you're kind of a little hopeful. And then OU comes out in the ninth and hits 3, and you're just, okay, well, that's the end of that. I don't think we're going to score 7 runs minimum in the bottom of the ninth. That's a lot to ask.
That was the other thing is that Oklahoma had they were being awfully aggressive in the ninth inning up by 5 runs. Like, they had a double steal call. I think it was like I said, it was top of the ninth. They were up by 5. I think they had 1 or 2 outs. So it's like, you're not doing anything except making yourselves look douchey. But I fired back on Twitter. It's just Skip Johnson being salty. He lost the series already. So I went and looked up Big 12 baseball stats. Unsurprising, Texas Tech batting is leading the conference. They lead the conference in an average at .318. They lead the conference in on-base percentage at .435. So for batting average, the next closest team is Oklahoma at .289. So you've got them by 30 points. On-base percentage, you're at .435. Closest team behind you is Oklahoma at .388. You've got them by 50 points. Your slugging percentage is ridiculous. You're at .533. And so your slugging percentage is the amount of hits that you have that go for 2, 3, or 4 bases. So it's a double, triple, or home run. Texas Tech slugging percentage is .533. So 53% of all your hits are extra base hits.
Wow.
Next closest team looks like Texas at .427. So you've got a full point and then some on them. Total runs, you've scored 369 runs. Next closest team is Oklahoma at .272. So you've scored almost 100 more runs on the season. And then in doubles, triples, and home runs, you're outpacing everybody. You lead Oklahoma by 3 doubles, which isn't much. You lead Texas by 2 triples. But then you get to home runs. You have 58 home runs on the season. Next closest team is Oklahoma State at 39. So nearly 20 more home runs on your roster than anybody else in the conference. Your pitching, I think overall, is fourth in the conference with the ERA, so not bad. Individual batting, Grant Little's number one. His average is .404. On base is .497. Slugging is .719. He's got 9 home runs. Josh Young is second on that list. Again, .404 average. His on base is slightly higher at .500. Slugging is .693. Grant Little's slugging percentage is nearly 72%. 3 out of every 4 of his hits are going for doubles or better.
That's not bad. That's not, even to a novice like me, those sound like good things.
Yeah, so you got 1 and 2 on individual batters, and then you've got Gabe Holt at 7. Individual pitching, you've got 1 and 2, Davis Martin, Ryan Scheder. Jared Jancek is the guy from TCU. He's 5. And then John McMillan is tied for 9th. Hits, runs scored, doubles. Okay, home runs. Cody Clemens from UT leads the conference at 13. And then Zach Reams is tied for 3rd at 11. So you've got Colin Simpson of Oklahoma State has 12. Zach Reams and Steele Walker, who was just a beast to handle from Oklahoma, are both at 11. And you've got a bunch of dudes tied with 9, including Grant Little, Lucan Baker, Michael Davis. So, yeah. I'd say you're doing pretty well.
Yeah, especially having one of the top RPIs in the league.
Yeah, you're number one in the league. So I think you're second or third in RPI.
Yeah. So that's... you know, like you were saying earlier, OU's numbers are probably a little bit inflated based on who they played earlier on. Of course, you know, Tech did pour it on teams like whatever that Northeastern team or whoever it was. Where mm-hmm.
We also did it to Kansas State too.
We scored
76. Well, we scored 56 runs against Kansas State, and then number 20 against New Mexico. So we scored 76 in those 4-game stretch
in a week.
Yeah, which, like, if you were to even throw out all of those runs, you would still be leading the conference in runs by 40.
Yeah.
I did not realize that Texas Tech had scored more, like, 100 more runs than anybody else in the conference.
No, I had no idea. Because it seems like when they – you just kind of forget about the blowouts or the big games.
Which Texas had a lot of.
Which they really have. And what kind of sticks with you are the games where they only put up 4 or only put up 1, like tonight. And you're just kind of, oh, man, that's kind of frustrating. But,
because you see what they can do.
Yes.
Like, okay, you kind of get used to them 7, 8, 12 runs. And
yeah,
you go against the Arkansas and put up 1.
And a lot of times they get 3 or 4 in an inning. You know, I wonder if there's a stat. I'm sure there is somewhere, like how many – multiple run innings they've had, or how many times they've had 3 or 4, 3 or more runs in an inning or something. It just seems like they'll just latch onto something and go. And even if they change pitchers, it's just doesn't matter. The next guy will just get taken apart too. So I forget how dominant they are because you just kind of unfortunately got used to seeing it.
So, just speaking of just some of these like weird stats, number of triples in a game, who do you think leads and how many do you think they have?
Is it Davis?
No. So, this would be a team.
Oh, a team. Okay.
Like,
okay.
Which team has the most triples recorded in one game?
Oh, in one game. Okay. Well, I'm based off of this conversation, I'm going to say Tech.
You're right on that one.
And then I'm going to say 4, which sounds insane to me.
It is. They had 4 triples against New Mexico a week ago today.
Yeah, I think that was when the wind was blowing just right outside center, just right out towards center field. Yeah, I listened to some of that, but I didn't remember there being that many triples or anything. But yeah, okay. As soon as the 4 came up in my head, and I thought, that's crazy.
Number of times hit by pitch in a single game. Texas Tech leads this one. We were at this game 8 times.
Yeah, and what
they
was it?
8 batters hit in one game.
Well, wasn't it? Was it Davis who got hit 5 times?
No, it was Warren. Oh. Every time he got up there, he got hit. It's like, at one point, is this like intentional?
Yeah, it almost felt like it.
Sorry, what was that other one? We're looking for innings.
Innings with multiple runs, or you know, more than 3 or more than 4, whatever they might possibly have cooked up. Whatever Jonah Hill has stored away on a spreadsheet somewhere. I haven't even seen that movie. Nobody quizzed me on Moneyball. I don't know anything about what it's about, aside from baseball stats and Brad Pitt's in it.
So that they also have all those stats broken down, like complete or total season and then Big 12 season. In Big 12 play, Texas Tech leads in batting average at .314 and on base percentage at .413, slugging percentage at .527. Leads in doubles, does not lead in triples, does lead in home runs, does lead in RBIs, does lead on... Nope. Or second on walks. We lead as in like we have the lowest number of strikeouts. It's just ridiculous.
Agreed.
Okay. So we've got some great questions that you guys submitted this week. We are going to continue our structure that we've come up with the past couple of weeks. We're going to have the mailbag edition come out in a day or so. We're going to be talking about putting together a... Not necessarily like a Mount Rushmore, but we're going to a quarterback, a running back, and 5 wide receivers from any player in Tech history. We're going to put that team together. We're going to talk about position groups, which team has better position groups, 2017 Texas Tech or 2018. Got a question, some hypotheticals. If Dakota Allen or Jordan Brooks were to go down, what kind of state is our defense in? Talking about baseball, why are there so many different polls in baseball, and why does Tech just pick whichever one's highest? That one's easy. And then this one's really interesting. I'm interested to see where Michael goes with this. If Texas Tech could be guaranteed a national championship once every 10 years in the sport of your choice, at the cost of every other sport being at the bottom of all Power 5 schools, would you take it? So
I like that question, too. That's probably my favorite one.
That'll be a good one. You'll have to tune into the mailbag edition. So with that, I think we'll end it here. For Michael, I'm Spencer. Thanks for tuning in to episode 17 of the 23 Personnel Podcast. About to drop the other name, the previous name. Probably hit with some kind of copyright infringement, a new cease and desist letter.
They're listening.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, so with that, we'll catch you next week.